All right. Once again, happy Sabbath, everybody. And I hope everybody got the email I sent out from last week's lesson that I had done some significant updating to the lesson, added a few things in, and had it posted to the website. So I hope you all got that. And I know you're busy during the week and don't know if you have a chance to even look at those type things. But my responsibility is to get it done, get it out there. So I did. So tonight, we know that the world is reeling to and fro, watching the political spectrums of all the nations of the world. And of course, here we just went through the Democratic National Convention. I watched a little bit of it. It was interesting. And we are very divided over this impending presidential election. The whole world has been negatively impacted by the current coronavirus crisis, be it real, fake, man-made, or whatever. And we all probably know or have heard of someone, be it family, friend, or other association, that has died from what has been concluded to be this virus. All those persons in the world that are members of the household of faith, we are fast approaching the final appointed times of Elohim's spiritual year. Yay! But this year, we are being challenged, perhaps like no other before in our lives, to do and remember the following that we also read last week as we discussed whether or not we are sure of the trees we're eating from. And so in 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 9, it says, "But he that lacketh these things is blind, and cannot see afar off, and hath forgotten that he was purged from his old sins." Do you remember what these things are? Well, they are to have diligence, faith, virtue, knowledge, temperance, godliness, brotherly kindness, and charity. And all of these are the attributes that lead us to glory and virtue, our moral excellence. The apostle went on to say that these things are necessary to make our calling and election sure, and that if we do these things, we shall never fall. And yet, if we lack them, we are blind. And it's quite telling that these attributes begin with diligence, faith, virtue, and knowledge. And this tells us that we must be diligent in establishing our faith, that leads us to our virtue, all based on our knowledge of the truth. It is as though the other attributes, which were temperance, godliness, brotherly kindness, and charity, they're only possible if those four have been established. Now, knowing that these things, in the midst of the different challenges we each face daily to sustain our calling and election, we need to challenge our focus to what we've been called out to and chosen to walk in the light of. Believe it or not, the events of this particular year have given us a unique opportunity to practice the light we have been given. I remember when my personal spiritual walk began, I took the challenge that the word of Elohim must conclusively show me that Yahshua HaMashiach was in fact in the belly of the earth 3 days and three nights, so that I could accept that it was, in fact, the word of Elohim, and I did not need any other source to see it. To do this, I had to be diligent. In essence, I had to stay with it until I had an answer, one way or another. I allowed myself to be diligent. I also had to allow myself to be taken back and broken so that my faith might be established. You see, the powers all about us challenge our faith. It is only as we allow ourselves to be broken that our faith may be established and, in fact, increased. This leads to our virtue because we are willing to release our old selves. And then Elohim allows us to begin the process of being led by the Spirit of Truth into the knowledge of the truth once we are willing to commit to it. In this lesson, number 160, from Sabbath to Sabbath, the ultimate collection, we're going to take a look at one of the creations established by Elohim that sets the focus of Elohim's plan of salvation. And as we shall learn, this entire plan of salvation is presented in all of the appointed times Elohim presented to the only family on earth that they knew, the children of Israel. For me, this began when Elohim's word taught me of these Sabbaths that led me to conclude without doubt that Yahshua did accomplish the only proof sign that he gave us. He was in the belly of the earth for 3 days and three nights. So with that, let's just jump in to what is presented in Elohim's word, starting with Genesis chapter 2 and verse 1. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 1. Going to be in Genesis a little bit. It reads, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the hosts of them. And on this seventh day, Elohim ended his work which he had made. And he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And Elohim blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which Elohim created and made." So when Elohim completed the creation of the heavens and the earth as we know it, even in modernity, this is what Elohim declares that they did at the end of creation week. And as we flow with one another in this lesson, pay close attention to what Elohim ended and rested from. Elohim ended and rested from the work that had been made during the first 6 days. And I believe this to be significant. Now, so that we're all on the same page, why do I say they did? Well, today in modernity, Elohim's word is a mystery to the overwhelming majority of those who proclaim themselves to be Christian. In fact, we were informed by Elohim that it was they that accomplished this based on their established order. Look at Genesis chapter 1 and verse 26, where we know it and we're familiar with this. And Elohim said, "Let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." Do you notice the duality? Both in how Elohim is presented themselves as well as how the creation of man is presented. It reads, "Let them have dominion," etc. This is a metaphor for both the man and the woman. Many of us accept the biblical facts that this reference to us refers to the two omnipotent entities eventually presented to us as the Father and the Son. If we jump ahead to the end of the creation process that we shall learn is on full display in modernity, these two are together again, just as they were in the beginning. Go to Revelation chapter 21, verses 22 and 23, where it reads, "And I saw no temple therein, for the Lord Elohim Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. And the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon, to shine in it. For the glory of Elohim did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof." Here is the family of Elohim, who made man in their own image on the sixth day of their creation week. This is how they shall appear when the new Jerusalem shall appear at the end of another creation. As we shall see, these words teach us that these events shall occur after the final Sabbath day. Here is another quiet secret. The Sabbath was made for the man created on the sixth day. Let's remember this as we continue to study. And seeing the duality that was first created in man, both omnipotent entities established that in the very beginning of creation of the man in their image, they also blessed the seventh day of creation week and sanctified it. They were in perfect union about what their objective was. What this lesson will teach us is that this was simply the first phase of the process of the creation of man in their image. In fact, as they began this process, another important lesson about this creation was also established in chapter 1 of Genesis and verse 27. It says, "So Elohim created man in his image. In the image of Elohim created he him. Male and female created he them." Now, as Elohim's word has further presented to anyone willing to accept it, the family of Elohim also created some form of hierarchy within themselves. Notice how Elohim presents his creation. They first said, in the image of Elohim created he him, and then it reads, male and female created he them. This establishes another hierarchy. Elohim first created the male. Elohim then created them, male and female. If we believe in and accept Elohim's word, we know that the woman was taken from the man's ribs. She was originally in the man's body that was created in the image of Elohim. This is so important to us if we are to diligently walk in faith and virtue. Anyone coming to Yahshua HaMashiach must accept and walk in this knowledge. Anyone who doesn't or refuses to accept this is eating from the same tree the woman ate from and was misled. For both the man and the woman, this establishes a spiritual maturity that leads to virtue that can only be accomplished if we all allow ourselves to be broken in humility to the will of Elohim. Before we go on, let us see the ultimate act of humility that we've been called out of this world to follow. Look at Philippians in the New Covenant, chapter 2 and verse 5. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 5. I'm going to read three verses, verse 5 through 7. And the apostle says, let this mind be in you, which was also in HaMashiach Yahshua. Now, here's the problem with all of us, and particularly with those who claim themselves to be Christians. This is the mindset we're supposed to walk in. We have spoken a lot lately about our women engaging in physical practices that are resulting in the demasculinizing of the men of the children of Israel. They're not walking in the mind of HaMashiach Yahshua. And the men are even more guilty for allowing these wicked things to occur to them by these women. Remember, it was Adam's weakness in allowing himself to be fed by the woman that led to death coming into the world. We're going to read that a little bit later. Verse 6, who being in the form of Elohim, thought it not robbery to be equal with Elohim, but made himself of no reputation and took upon him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of men. Now, women of the household of faith must reason to themselves the simplicity of the duality being taught here. Yahshua existed in the form of Elohim and yet made himself of no reputation, taking on the form of a servant in the likeness of men. Women were created in the form of man, but many have a problem with accepting their original and foremost commission. We remember this in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18, where it says, and Yahweh Elohim said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him and help meet for him. Women, if you've been called out of this world to Yahshua HaMashiach, you must accept that this is why you were created. Your purpose, regardless of the mentality of modernity, is to be a helpmeet for man. Verses 21 to 24 describe how Yahweh created the woman from the man's rib and presented her to the man, who acknowledged she was of his flesh. These were to become one flesh. How beautiful. Man, you must accept that your commission is first to be the head of this family of one flesh while protecting your rib, even in the midst of the mentality of modernity. Both man and woman must accept that their mindset must mirror the mindset of Yahshua, who accepted a lower role. Men must lead their families to Elohim, accepting their roles in the humility of HaMashiach. And I want to go quickly back to something we discussed last week. Note this, Genesis chapter 2 and verse 25, where it says, and they were both naked, and the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. Now, I want you to remember how I said the following last week. Is it possible that the man knew that they had no clothes on, but did not consider it to be nakedness in a purely negative or evil sense? In essence, it was their perception that had not yet been opened. it is possible that the man had eaten of those other trees in the garden. Verse 25 teaches us that they both knew they were naked, but they were not ashamed. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil taught them both a different perspective on their nakedness. He taught them that they should be ashamed of their nakedness. Sadly, there is much occurring between man and woman in modernity that they both should be ashamed of. Let's continue learning about HaMashiach. Philippians 2 and verse 8. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 8 through 11. 8 through 11. And where it reads, "And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Wherefore Elohim also has highly exalted him and given him a name which is above every name, that at the name of Yahshua every knee should bow, of things in heaven, and on earth, and under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Yahshua HaMashiach is Lord." He's master. "To the glory of Elohim the Father." Remember how the Apostle Peter taught that we were called to glory. Yahshua humbled himself to the glory of Elohim the Father. If we accept this mindset of humility and confess Yahshua HaMashiach as our master, it is to the glory of Elohim the Father. As a result of the humility of Yahshua, only one of the members of the family of Elohim would ultimately manifest themselves to this man. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 4. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 4, where it reads, "These are the generation of the heavens and of the earth, when they were created, in the day that Yahweh Elohim made the earth and the heavens." Drop down to verse 7. "And Yahweh Elohim formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul." It was Yahweh of Elohim, now Yahshua HaMashiach, that took up the rib of the man he created and created the woman. And I want to revisit one other thing before we go on. Genesis 1:28. Where it reads, "And Elohim blessed them, and Elohim said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth," which I believe actually meant "and fill the earth," because there were, mankind had not been there before. So there was nothing for them to replenish. It was a new thing. "And subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every little thing, living thing, rather, that moveth upon the earth." It was to both the man and the woman, now one flesh, who were told to be fruitful and multiply and either replenish or refill the earth and subdue it. Does that give you, O man, and you, O woman, a proper perspective of the plan Elohim established to create man in their image? We were to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth in the mindset of Elohim as established through Yahshua himself when he came into the world as Yahshua HaMashiach. As men and women have allowed themselves to eat of the wrong trees, led by the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they have moved far away from their original commission as man and woman, one flesh. For those of the household of faith, we must seize upon this opportunity to shine our light. We must begin with reestablishing our honoring of and acceptance to this wonderful plan of salvation our eyes have been opened to. If we've been eating of the tree of life and those other spiritual trees that were created to be pleasant to the sight and good for food, we read about that last week. Consider this. How many of modernity's Christians honor the seventh day of each week as the Sabbath? And how many Christians even know that the seventh day of each week is the Sabbath of Yahweh? Probably not many. And this is a primary reason why the children of Israel of modernity live in anguish in modernity. The only family in the earth known by Yahweh refuses to humble itself to Elohim and accept its commission. As such, the facts of why it exists in its current condition should be obvious to all who continue to grow in the knowledge of the truth. For those of us of the household of faith, let us never forget our commissions. Knowing that it was Yahweh of Elohim who actually took on the task of creating the earth, the heavens, and man, he himself would elevate the day when Elohim rested to a major commission of his own. When the children of Israel were given Yahweh's Ten Commandments, he included these words, Exodus chapter 20 and verse 8. Exodus 20 and verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. He first said, remember this day. This must be the first thing for us to do each week as we approach this special day. The day before the Sabbath must be our preparation day. Are we allowing the fruits of the world to exhaust our mindsets to thwart our preparations? What are our mindsets? We're supposed to have the mindsets of HaMashiach. Remember? He said, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And the word holy is translated from the Hebrew word Kadesh, Q-A-D-A-S-H, meaning to be ceremonially and or morally clean. Remember also that Elohim sanctified this day. Verse 9. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of Yahweh, thy Elohim. Thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates. Yahweh then elevates further what our mindset should be as one flesh. For in 6 days, Yahweh made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested on the seventh day, wherefore Yahweh blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. And so finally, Yahweh not only blessed the seventh day, he hallowed it. And guess what? The word hallowed here is translated from the Hebrew word kadesh. Yes, it's the same word as holy. Men and women were created to keep this day holy, ceremoniously, and morally clean because Yahweh had already sanctified and made it clean. The children of Israel, and perhaps even some of us of the household of faith, have missed these absolutes. And today in modernity, we are reaping what we deserve as a result. And just as Yahweh made it plain what the Sabbath commandment was, he commanded something else that is so profound. He says in verse 12, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which Yahweh thy Elohim giveth thee. Yahweh immediately follows the Sabbath commandment with the commandment to honor our fathers and our mothers. Is this order by coincidence? Perhaps here is the perfect place to remember what Yahshua taught us about his creation. We must also understand about the Sabbath is that although Elohim rested on the Sabbath day of creation, it was created for another purpose. Go to Mark verses 27 and 28. Mark chapter 2, verses 27 through 28, where it says, and he said unto them, this is Yahshua speaking, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. Why? Because he created it. It was created for man and woman, to be in the image of Elohim. Notice something interesting here as Yahweh presented these commandments. He first said, thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gate. Why does he include the son, daughter, manservant, cattle, and stranger? It's because the man and the woman were commissioned to walk in the understanding of their creation and commission. They were commissioned to be fruitful and multiply. They were supposed to be one flesh, walking in the mindset of Elohim as one in a commission of subduing others and not the other way around. And so the man and the woman were both commissioned to walk in the honoring of the Sabbath and to so teach their sons and daughters. So the commandment of the Sabbath was an umbrella for the man and the woman to be walking in the mindset of their commission as one flesh before Elohim. This is why the commandment to honor father and mothers for the children and others immediately followed the commandment of the Sabbath. Later, as Yahweh began to provide further guidance to the children of Israel of his mindset, we were provided these words. Matthew chapter 58 and verse 13. And the King James Version begins as follows. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath. Now, this translation is kind of faulty as it begins and misleading. So I'm going to read it from the New American Standard, which is a little clearer. It says, if because of the Sabbath you turn your foot from doing your own pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of Yahweh honorable, and honor it, desisting from your own ways, from seeking your own pleasure, and speaking your own word. Through the prophet Isaiah, we learn further of the mind of Elohim when Yahweh blessed the Sabbath and sanctified it by making it holy. In the midst of our walks in modernity, we face sophisticated fruits that subtly affect and effect our mindsets. Some attend fellowships and do no work and accept that they have honored the Sabbath. Yahweh did command that we rest and not work on the Sabbath. I believe that we all need to understand that when Elohim rested on the Sabbath, their mindsets rested not only from working, but from consuming any other food than that of the purpose of the Sabbath. Remember, Yahweh says his ways and thoughts were higher than our thoughts. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil went to the woman, the weaker part of the man. In modernity, neither man nor woman are spared this tree's efforts to feed and distract us. Yahweh here instructs that we must turn from walking in our pleasure, from doing our own ways on his holy day. Now, each of us have the spiritual obligation to take a spiritual inventory to determine if this is our mindset. And if it isn't, we need to ask ourselves the question we asked in the previous lesson. What trees are we eating from? Yahweh said that we are to call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of Yahweh. We are to honor him, not doing our own ways, nor finding our own pleasure, nor speaking our own words on his Sabbath. Are we doing this? And if so, it is only then that he makes this promise to us. Verse 14 of Isaiah 58. Then shalt thou delight thyself in Yahweh, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Yaakov thy father. For the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. We have this promise by the mouth of Yahweh. The children of Israel of modernity have eaten food that has them believing that someone named Jesus Christ has taken the words of Yahweh and completely discarded them somewhere in a dump site of irrelevance. The mindsets and actions of each member of the household of faith cannot allow them to walk backwards into this world. Yahweh would pray for us on this manner, which we're familiar with, in Yochanan, chapter 17, verses 14 through 16. Yochanan, and we know that's John, chapter 17, 14 through 16, where it's, I have given them thy word, and the world has hated them, talking about his disciples, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I pray not that thou should take them out of the world, but thou should keep them from their evil. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. We have been called out of the world, not physically, but spiritually, as Yahshua was and is not of the world. Do we understand that anyone who convinces us to do our own pleasure or to speak our own words or theirs on Yahweh's Sabbath is feeding us with food from a forbidden source? And whether of ignorance or willfully, is not following Yahweh. We're supposed to know that this day is the very essence of the framework of the plan of salvation. We should know that with those and the events involving Abraham, Isaac, and Yaakov, Yahweh would call the children of Israel out of Egypt and present unto them the framework of Elohim's plan of salvation. And remember how this framework began. Go to Leviticus chapter 23. And verse 1, Leviticus 23 and verses 1 and 2. Leviticus 23, verses 1 and 2. And Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, concerning the feast of Yahweh, which ye shall proclaim to be holy convocation, even these are my feasts. Here, Yahweh establishes these feasts as this very important framework. If we have done what the Apostle Paul instructed us to do, we have grown in our understanding of these words. The Apostle said the following. We're going to come right back a little bit. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 14, verses 14 and 15, he says, of these things put them in remembrance, charging before the Lord that they strive not about words to no profit and to the subverting of the hearers. Well, that's kind of talking to us about the Sabbath. Also, think about this. This is not in my notes, but if we are talking our own word, doing our own pleasure, we're actually striving against the word with words that have no spiritual profit to us. Think about that. We're subverting, and it's to the subverting of the hearers. We're supposed to put these things into our remembrance, to not strive on unprofitable words, subverting the hearers of these vain words of strife. This is magnified on the Sabbath day of Yahweh, when our words are supposed to be his words. Our minds are supposed to be on him. This is why the apostle followed up with these instructions in verse 15. Study to shew thyself approved unto Elohim, a workman that needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. We must study for our approval unto Elohim. This is the only way for us to divide the word of truth, so that the comforter has something to bring to our memory. In studying these words, we learn that the word feast in Leviticus 23:2 was translated from the Hebrew word moed, M-O-E-D, meaning appointed time. It is these appointed times that are the framework of Elohim's plan of salvation. And look at what is the first of these appointed times. Let's go back to Leviticus chapter 23 and pick it up at verse 3. Leviticus 23 and verse 3. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest and holy convocation. He shall do no work. It is the Sabbath of Yahweh in all your dwellings. And that's an interesting term. So the weekly Sabbath is the first of these appointed times and sets the tone for each of the others. And notice that it says it is the Sabbath of Yahweh in all your dwellings. Now we know it was made for man. What do we do on the Sabbath? Well, normal times, we try to fellowship with our fellow members of the household of faith where we find them, typically in a place away from our home. Perhaps at the beginning of the Sabbath even, we attend a Bible study, like we're doing tonight, either at a place or through some form of communication, such as the telephone or the computer. The point here is that wherever we are located on the Sabbath, it is our dwelling, right? We must still honor the Sabbath wherever we are. We will learn shortly that this commandment is for the entire 24-hour day, wherever our dwelling places may be. Another point of interest about the Sabbath. Remember, we are to remember the Sabbath of creation as we keep the Sabbath holy. Man was created on the sixth day of creation week. In Genesis 5, and the fifth verse, We learn that Adam lived 930 years old. To be 930 years old. Now, anyone so inclined can also do the math we are provided in this chapter to learn that the flood occurred 1,611 years after Adam's birth. This suggests that the flood occurred either during the Sabbath of creation week or shortly thereafter. I believe it's more leaning towards the Sabbath. We know that Adam was told that on the day that he ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, he would die. Here is where we must reason together. Remember the brother who holds to the belief that each of the days of creation week lasted 24 hours? Well, if that were true, how old was Adam when he ate of the tree with his wife? That is the day that he should have died. This would have had to happen because Elohim declared it. But Elohim has informed us that Adam lived for 930 years. Let us also remember what we read in last Sabbath's lesson. Yahweh proclaims that his thoughts and his ways were not our thoughts and or our ways. He informed us by both the prophets and, most importantly, his apostle, to whom he gave the keys of the kingdom, that a day to Elohim is as 1,000 years. Brothers and sisters, believe it or not, this seems to be a mystery within the household of faith. Understanding that this is the mindset of Elohim, we should be able to discern that Adam did die on the day that he ate of the tree, in accordance with what the mind of Elohim considers to be a day. Now, some may say that Adam died a spiritual death on the 24-hour day that he ate of the tree. And this may be true as well. We read something else last Sabbath that is applicable here. Look at Romans chapter 5 and verse 12. Romans chapter 5 and verse 12. One verse there. Romans chapter 5 and verse 12. Where it says, wherefore, as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, and so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. Now, once again, brethren, is this a spiritual death that has been passed upon all men, or a physical death? The Apostle Paul answered this question in Hebrews chapter 9, verses 27 and 28. Hebrews chapter 9, verses 27 and 28, where he says, and as it is appointed unto all men once to die, but after this the judgment. So Hamashiach was once offered to bear the sins of many, and unto them that look for him shall he appear the second time without sin unto salvation. It is appointed to all men to die once. Are we in a non-agreement that this is a physical death? If this was a spiritual death, Adam is spiritually lost. As a matter of fact, all men will be spiritually lost, because it is appointed for unto all men to die once. And who amongst us can proclaim that Adam actually died the spiritual death? And when did this appointment happen for man to die? It happened when Adam ate of that forbidden food. Through Hamashiach's offering, we have the opportunity to be raised from this death, this physical death, into life upon his appearance without sin unto salvation. And so another key issue here is this. Knowing how Elohim thinks, Adam appears to have physically died on the Sabbath of creation. This strongly suggests that the following also occurred on this same Sabbath. Genesis chapter 6, verses 6 through 8. Genesis chapter 6, verses 6 through 8, where it says, and it repented Yahweh that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And Yahweh said, I will destroy man, whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, and the creeping thing, and the fowls of the air. For it repenteth me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of Yahweh. Except for Noah, who had found grace, which is favor, in Yahweh's eyes, Yahweh intended to destroy all other men. He did so with the flood, which means that except for Noah and his family, the Adamic line was cut off. And then we read this in Genesis 9 and verse 1. And Elohim blessed Noah and his son and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. Noah and his sons were commanded this to be fruitful, multiply, and replenish this earth. This began a new line. This new line appears to have begun on the Sabbath day of creation. And if so, this Sabbath day, while being the end of the creation of the heavens and of the earth, began the creation of a new line of man through Noah and his three sons. And as we shall see shortly see, this strongly suggests as we progress through the other appointed times, Yahweh presented to his earthly family, the children of Israel. Glad to hear Brother Gary's got, hate he missed the first part, but it'll be there for him to go back and take a listen to it because it's very important. I think we all agree. One other important fact, the flood appeared to have occurred on the Sabbath. Some might say that the flood represents work for Elohim, but remember, Elohim rested from the work of all that was made during the first 6 days. Also, the Sabbath would represent the beginning of the spiritual plan of salvation because Noah and the flood, and because of Noah and the flood, and because Abraham had Isaac approximately 390 years after the flood. And that's almost pretty much exact based on what we're given. As such, Abraham may have become the father of the faithful during this Sabbath. Remember this as we continue. Look at Galatians chapter 3 and verse 29. We all remember this, where it says, if we be Hamashiach, then we are ye Abraham's seed, and heirs according to the promise. This promise would have occurred on the Sabbath of creation, which would mean it was the first day of the seven-day plan of salvation, which will become clearer as we proceed. As we proceed, allow yourself to think of these appointed times as a preparation for the collection we are studying in this lesson. And remember, the title of tonight's lesson is From Sabbath to Sabbath, the Ultimate Collection. So now, let's go back to Leviticus chapter 23 and verse 4. We just read about the first of the appointed times, the Sabbath. Verse 4 talks about the rest of them, where it says, these are the feasts of Yahweh, even holy convocations, which you shall proclaim in their season. And as we return to these appointed times, Yahweh repeats that these indeed are his appointed times, for which the weekly Sabbath, remembering the Sabbath of creation week, was the first. In this verse, the word feast and season are both translated from the Hebrew word moed, meaning appointed times. Now, why the translators chose to use two different translations is anybody's guess. Verse 5, in the 14th day of the first month at even is Yahweh's Passover, and on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread unto Yahweh. 7 days ye must eat unleavened bread. In the first day ye shall have a holy convocation, ye shall do no servile work, but ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto Yahweh 7 days, and in the seventh day of the holy convocation, ye shall do no servile work. So in these verses, the second and third of Yahweh's appointed times were commanded to the children of Israel. The second is the Passover, which all of the household of faith now knows is Yahshua HaMashiach, our Passover lamb, of whom the Apostle Paul early informed us shall appear the second time without sin until salvation. This is the beginning of the preparation for the ultimate collection. Yahweh gave us the Sabbath, and then gave us this Passover day to cleanse us so that we might be acceptable unto Elohim. And then Yahweh gave us the third appointed time, unleavened bread, during which the household of faith removes all physical leaven from our home, symbolizing the removal of all sin from our lives. We must do this for 7 days, the first and the seventh days, the high day Sabbaths, in which we observe the same rules given us for the weekly Sabbath. Yet, while we observe the same rules as the weekly Sabbath, these are not the seventh day Sabbath and will set the tone for the remaining appointed times yet to come. What a blessing these first three appointed times are, but they are for our spiritual cleansing to the glory of Elohim, to learn to walk in their mindset. And we also notice something else here. The word feast in verse 6 is not moed as it was earlier. It is chag, C-H-A-G, meaning festival. This too sets the standard for some of the remaining feasts. Let's go to verse 15. And ye shall count unto you from the morrow after the Sabbath, from the day, that ye brought the sheaf of the wave offering. We know that's talking about HaMashiach. 7 Sabbaths shall be complete. Even unto the morrow after the 7th Sabbath shall ye number 50 days, and ye shall offer a new meat offering unto Yahweh. Verse 21. And ye shall proclaim on the selfsame day it may be a holy convocation unto you. Ye shall do no servile work. It shall be a statute forever in all your dwelling throughout your generations. And when ye reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not make clean riddance of the corners of thy field which thou reapest, neither shalt thou gather any gleaning of thy harvest. Thou shalt leave them unto the poor and to the stranger. I am Yahweh, your Elohim. This fourth appointed time is called Pentecost by most in modernity. We of the household of faith should know that Pentecost simply means 50. Elohim is faithful and provides us his own names for this day. Look at Exodus chapter 23 and verse 16. Exodus 23 and verse 16, where it reads, "And the feast of the harvest, the first fruit of thy labors, which thou hast sown in the field, and the feast of ingathering," of course we know that's tabernacles, "in the end of the year, when thou hast gathered in thy labors out of the field." So the first name we're provided is the Feast of Harvest, which underscores the true purpose of this feast, also a festival. It pictures the remembrance of Yahshua as the first fruits, and those members of the household of faith who shall form the first fruits of man to be raised when Yahshua returns for them. So it is a harvest. However, there's also a second name provided to us, which is more prevalent in Scripture. Leviticus 34 and 22. Leviticus 34 and 22, where it reads, "And thou shalt observe the feast of weeks of the first fruits of the wheat harvest, and the feast of him gathering at year's end." This name, feature weeks, is also included in Deuteronomy chapter 16 and verse 10, and chapter 16 and verse 16, as well as in 2 Chronicles chapter 8 and verse 13. As such, this appears to have been the more prominent name because the name Feast of Harvest only appears the one time. These conclude the first four of Yahweh's appointed times. If we're walking in the mindset of Yahshua HaMashiach, we should be able to see that these four appointed times are our preparation for the last three appointed times. In fact, the Feast of Weeks is a direct reflection of the ultimate collection we are studying. And just as the household of faith is preparing right now in modernity, the soon coming seventh month of Yahweh's spiritual year presents three final appointed times. As we look forward to these remaining appointed times, there is one thing that we will see. They all ultimately represent the same time period. This will manifest itself as we get closer to our understanding of them as the ultimate collection. Leviticus 23 and verse 24. Leviticus 23 and verse 24. He says, speaking to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, this is the final spiritual month of the year, in the first day of the month, ye shall have a Sabbath, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, and holy convocation. Ye shall do no servile work, but ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto Yahweh. This is the fifth appointed time. This fifth appointed, it remembers the many times the trumpets have been blown in Elohim's word, and yet even more prominently looks ahead to the final seven trumpets yet to blow. And for the household of faith, it is the last of these seven trumpets we hope to hear, whether we are alive or in our graves. For this trumpet shall be a call for the dead in HaMashiach to rise from their graves, to be changed from these physical tabernacles, and forever be with HaMashiach to rule on this earth. And notice, it too is a high day Sabbath, just as those we are commanded to observe during unleavened bread. Verse 26. And Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, also on the tenth day of this seventh month, there shall be a day of atonement. It shall be a holy convocation unto you, and ye shall afflict your souls, and offer an offering made by fire unto Yahweh, and ye shall do no work in that day, for it is a day of atonement to make atonement for you before Yahweh your Elohim. For whatsoever soul it be that shall not be afflicted in that day, he shall be cut off among his people. And whatsoever soul that doeth any work in that same day, the same soul will I destroy from among his people. Ye shall do no manner of work. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations and all your dwellings, wherever you dwell. It shall be a Sabbath of rest, and ye shall afflict your souls in the ninth day of the month at even, from even unto even shall ye celebrate your Sabbath. Here we have the sixth of Yahweh's appointed times. It is a day of affliction in that we fast for the entire day. It too is a high day Sabbath. There is great and yet controversial symbolism assigned to this day. Now, I won't get into these controversies except to say that this day, just like the other six appointed times, is all about Yahweh / Yahshua for those with eyes to see, or eating of the correct trees. And notice how that Yahweh teaches us another important lesson here about his Sabbath. They are from evening to evening. Whether it is a weekly Sabbath or a high day Sabbath, they are all for an entire 24-hour period from evening to evening that we must eliminate our own thinking and pleasure while concentrating only on Yahweh / Yahshua to the glory of Elohim. Is this too difficult for any member of the household of faith? If so, we need to examine our walks and our food sources. And finally, we have the following. Leviticus 23, starting in verse 33. And Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, speaking to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of this seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days unto Yahweh. On the first day shall be a holy convocation. Ye shall do no servile work. 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire unto Yahweh. On the eighth day shall be a holy convocation unto you. Ye shall offer an offering made by fire unto Yahweh. It is a solemn assembly. Ye shall do no servile work therein. And here we have the final appointed time. And as we shall see, the reason it is last because it represents the whole plan of salvation, beginning with the Sabbath day of creation week, and ending with the final Sabbath day of the ultimate collection of man to appear before Elohim. Now, this also has become controversial in that many believe this to be two separate appointed times. If so, these would be appointed times number 7 and 8. What does Yahweh's word say? Verse 36 clearly reads, 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire unto Yahweh. On the eighth day shall be a holy convocation unto you. Ask a simple question. This eighth day is the eighth day of what? Is it the eighth day of the month? Eighth day of the year? It's the eighth day. Where are the two appointed times? The confusion lies in the fact that there are two separate purposes for the first 7 days and the eighth day. Notice the first 7 days, verse 41. And you should keep it a feast unto Yahweh 7 days in the year. It should be a statute for every in your generation. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. You shall dwell in booths, which are temporary dwellings, 7 days. All that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am Yahweh, your Elohim. So the children of Israel were commanded to dwell in booths, temporary dwellings, or tabernacles, for 7 days. These first 7 days were to remind them that Yahweh made them to stay in these temporary tabernacles when he brought them out of their stay in Egypt under bondage. Now, we know that the children of Israel were in Egypt in bondage for hundreds of years, not 7 days. So why the 7 days? And why do we, or should we, continue to dwell in these temporary tabernacles or temporary booths for 7 days? Now, this too has become controversial in modernity, and I know of many Hebrew Israelites who refuse to keep the first 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacles or even dwell in temporary booths during this feast. In so doing, they officially observe only the first day and the eighth day. What does this commandment teach the members of the household of faith? Aren't we supposed to know by the mouth of the Apostle Peter that these 7 days represent 7 1,000-year periods to Elohim? Well, let's go back to 2 Peter chapter 3, 8, and 9. 2 Peter chapter 3, 8, and 9. And look at what it says here. But, beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but is long-suffering to usward, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. We have read verse 8 so many times as we have studied together. However, it is verse 9 that we need to grasp as well. Yahweh/Yahshua wants us to understand that he is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness. He thinks differently. He is taking his time so that all men shall have the opportunity to come to repentance. One of the metaphors of this appointed time should teach us to have patience and long-suffering for those outside, as Yahshua has. We do this as we are reminded that we still exist in these temporary dwellings of flesh until the following. Look at Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 13. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 13. Till we all come in the unity of faith and of the knowledge of the Son of Elohim unto a perfect man, unto the measure, the stature of the fullness of HaMashiach. And remember, we here are the saints, the called out ones. Until the saints, to the called out ones, all come into the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of Elohim. This is why we've been given 7 days. Remember, the promise began with Abraham on the same day that Noah replenished the earth. It is the time period that the household of faith from Noah until the end of the 7 days, 7,000 years, have been given to dwell in temporary tabernacles, to learn how to appear until Elohim is ready to receive those that have endured in his Son, Yahshua HaMashiach. And after the first 7 days, we have that eighth day. And remember, this day is also a high day Sabbath for the household of faith, the last high day Sabbath. Leviticus 23 and verse 36 said, on the eighth day shall be a holy convocation unto you, and you shall offer an offer made by fire unto Yahweh. It is a solemn assembly, and you shall do no servile work. Brothers and sisters, this eighth day, High Sabbath, ends Yahweh's appointed times. We began with the Sabbath of creation week, which Elohim's word teaches us, if we can see it, was a 1,000-year period. This is evidenced by the ages of the Adamic line in which many lived to be hundreds of years, but never reaching Elohim's version of a day, 1,000 years. And we have the following, which we know, in Revelation 20, verses 4 through 6. Revelation 20, verses 4 through 6, where it says, and I saw the thrones, and they sat upon them, and judgment was given unto them, and I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Yahshua and the word of Elohim, and which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands, and they lived and reigned with HaMashiach 1,000 years. But the rest of the dead lived not again until the 1,000 years were finished. This is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is he that had part in the first resurrection. On such the second death had absolutely no power. But they shall be the priests of Elohim and of HaMashiach, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. These resurrected saints shall rise in the first resurrection to live and reign with HaMashiach for 1,000 years, one day. This is the ultimate collection from amongst mankind. The prophet also refers to these as follows. Go to Zechariah chapter 14. Zechariah chapter 14, picking up at verse 1. Zechariah chapter 14, where he said, behold, the day of Yahweh cometh. Not the days, the day of Yahweh cometh, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. Verse 3. Then shall Yahweh go forth and fight against those nations, as when he fought in the day of battle, and his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west, and there shall be a very great valley, and half of the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half of it toward the south. Verse 5, and ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Azazel. Yea, ye shall flee, like as ye fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Yehuda. And Yahweh, my Elohim, shall come, and all the saints with thee. Here the prophet Jeremiah describes the events that shall occur on the earth at the beginning, or just before the beginning of the day of Yahweh. And we read how that Yahweh shall come and all the saints with him. These are the same saints we read of in the book of Revelations who were raised to reign with him for the 1,000 years one day. These endured. These chose to honor the Sabbath as they were commanded. In fact, it should be safe that these found the entire Sabbath to be a delight. One of my brothers likes to say how that after the Sabbath, he doesn't just jump back into his own pleasurable life. He likes to wind down. This is a dedication that we can all learn from and adapt if our mindsets are proper. What else shall happen on this day? Well, look at Isaiah chapter 11 and verse 10. Isaiah chapter 11 and verse 10, it says, and in that day there shall be a root of Jesse, which shall stand for an ensign of the people, and to it the Gentiles, which we know the nations, shall seek, and his rest shall be glorious. Now, remembering that a day of Elohim is 1,000 years, in that day there shall be a root of Jesse. Well, who is this root of Jesse? We know that this is referring to Yahshua by our belief in Elohim's word. Look at Matthew chapter 1 and verse 1. Matthew chapter 1 and verse 1. Where it says, the book of the generation of Yahshua HaMashiach, son of David, the son of Elohim. And we know that David is the son of Jesse. So he's of the root of Jesse. Notice that the prophet wrote that his rest shall be glorious. So when this Sabbath day of 1,000 years shall come, Yahshua shall stand for an ensign of the people, and his rest shall be glorious. What rest? Hebrews chapter 4, verse 8. For if Yahshua had given them rest, then would he not afterward have spoken of another day? We have not yet been given our rest from Yahshua, from his first advent to this earth in the flesh. We just haven't received it. This is why throughout Elohim's word, Yahweh/Yahshua spoke of another day, another Sabbath. Verse 9, there remaineth therefore a rest to the people of Elohim. For he that has entered into his rest, he also has ceased from his own works, as Elohim did from his. Let us labor, therefore, to enter into that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief. This day rests, I should say this word rests. In verse 9, it's translated from the Greek word sabbatismos, sabbatismos, which is a Sabbath day rest. While we're living in our temporary dwellings for the 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacles, we're laboring to enter into that Sabbath day rest, the eighth day and final Sabbath of Yahweh's appointed times. Now, this is also a great metaphor that too many, even amongst the household of faith, seem to not grasp. Our laboring has existed since the days of Noah. In fact, one can make a credible argument that spiritually it began in earnest with Abraham because of the promises. One fact that as we study the whole armor of Elohim is presented, called out one, since Noah shall exist in these temporary tabernacles for 7,000 years or 7 days. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 1 through 2. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. For we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of Elohim, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed upon with our house, which is from heaven. We're groaning in these physical tabernacles. But yet, as the children of Israel were physically delivered from their bondage in Egypt by Moses, we have been spiritually delivered from bondage by Yahshua HaMashiach. This is what we are reminded of as we dwell in temporary booths for 7 days during the first 7 days of tabernacles. Look at Galatians chapter 5 and verse 1. Galatians chapter 5 and verse 1. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty wherewith HaMashiach hath made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. He has made us free of this bondage. Look at Romans chapter 6 and verse 16 through 18. Know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are to whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness. But Elohim be thanked that ye were the servants of sin, but ye have obeyed from the heart that from that form of a doctrine which delivered you. Being then made free of sin, from sin, ye became the servants of righteousness. We should be reminding ourselves of this freedom from this spiritual bondage for the first 7 days of our celebrating in temporary dwelling during the Feast of Tabernacles, looking forward to the reward for our obedience to righteousness on that final Sabbath day, the eighth day. This is the greatest phase, the ultimate collection, but not the only phase of the collection. We have learned how that the saints shall begin a 1,000-year reign with Yahshua. Well, we also learned the following. Let's go back to Isaiah. Pick it up at Isaiah 11:11. Isaiah 11:11. Hope you're hanging in there with me. We'll get there soon. Isaiah 11:11, where it says, and it shall come to pass in that day that Yahweh shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria, from Egypt, and from Patros, and from Cush, and from Elam, and from Shinar, from Hamath, and from the isles of the sea. And he shall set up an ensign for the nations, and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Yehuda from the four corners of the earth. Through the prophet Isaiah, we also learn that this is also the time when Yahweh shall recover his people, the children of Israel, from their bondage a second time, this time for the nations in which they have been scattered. Look at Jeremiah chapter 30, verses 7 through 9. Jeremiah chapter 7 through 9. Jeremiah. He says, "Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it, even the time of Yaqub's trouble. But he shall be saved out of it. But it shall come to pass in that day, says Yahweh of hosts, I will break his yoke from off thy neck, and will burst thy bonds, and strangers shall no more serve themselves of him, but they shall serve Yahweh, their Elohim, and David, their king, whom I will raise up to them." Chapter 38 and verse 14. Chapter 38 and verse 14. "Therefore, son of man, prophesy and say unto God, thus saith Yahweh Elohim, in that day when my people of Israel dwell safely, shall thou know it." Hosea chapter 2, 18 through 23. Hosea chapter 2, 18 through 23. "And in that day will I make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field and with the fowls of the heaven, with the creeping things on the ground, and I will break the bow and the sword and the battle out of the earth, and will make them to lie down safely. Now I will betroth thee unto me forever. Yea, I will betroth thee unto me in righteousness, and in judgment, and in loving kindness, and in mercy. I will even betroth thee unto me in faithfulness. Thou shalt know Yahweh. And it shall come to pass in that day, I will hear, saith Yahweh. I will hear the heavens, and they shall hear the earth. And the earth shall hear the corn, and the wine, and the oil, and they shall hear Jezreel. And I will sow her unto me in the earth, and I will have mercy upon her that hath not obtained mercy. I will say to them that were not my people, Thou art my people. And they shall say, Thou art my Elohim." Yes, all of this shall occur in that day, the same final Sabbath. It is a collection in the flesh of the children of Israel that shall be gathered from all the nations from where they were scattered. However, their fate shall be totally different from that of the saints before they shall dwell in this land, before they shall dwell in this land described safely. Look at Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 33. Ezekiel chapter 20, verses 33 through 38. And I tell you, many in the household of faith do not know anything about these verses. Sadly. It says, "As I live, says Yahweh Elohim, surely with a mighty hand, with a stretched out arm, and with fury poured out, will I rule over you. And I will bring ye out from the people, and will gather you out of the countries wherein you are scattered, with a mighty hand, and with a stretched out arm, and with fury poured out. And I will bring you into the wilderness of the people, and there will I plead with you face to face, like as I pleaded with your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt. So will I plead with you, saith Yahweh Elohim. And I will cause you to pass under the rod, and I will bring you under the bond of the covenant. And I will purge out from among you the rebels and them that transgress against me. I shall bring them forth out of the country where they sojourn, and they shall not enter into the land of Israel. And ye shall know that I am Yahweh." You know, as I was reading these verses, I thought back to, he mentioned, as he pleaded with their fathers in the wilderness. And if we recall, everybody from, 21 and up, they were purged in the wilderness. Only those 20 and down, along with Moses and Joshua and a few others. But everybody else from 21 and up, they were purged. And we know in this purge, it's going to be great. So this is the second collection of men that shall occur on this final Sabbath, the children of Israel that shall live at that time. For with a mighty hand, with a stretched out arm, with fury poured out, shall they be gathered from out of the countries wherein they are scattered, even today in modernity. And believe it or not, we may be in the beginning phase of this purging process, as many of the children of Israel in modernity have fallen hard to the forces of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. This collection shall be an ugly process, and yet it shall be a part of the collection on this final Sabbath. And before we close our discussion on this Sabbath day, let us once again read of how these final three appointed times shall come together as Elohim completes the ultimate collection that shall occur in that day. Leviticus chapter 25 and verses 8 and 9. Leviticus chapter 25 verses 8 and 9. And thou shalt number seven Sabbath years unto thee, seven times 7 years, and the space of the seven Sabbaths of years shall be unto thee 49 years. Then shalt thou cause the trumpet of the jubilee to sound on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the day of atonement shall you make the trumpet sound throughout your land. In much of the household of faith, this is an untaught event. These verses symbolize the year of jubilee, the year of freedom, in which on some future 50th year, on this 50th year, on the day of atonement, the trumpet of the jubilee shall sound. This trumpet shall have two entirely different results to mankind at that time. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 15, 51 through 54. 1 Corinthians 15, 51 through 54. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we, talking about the church here, they called out one, we shall all be changed. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal put on immortality. So when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. Now, remember, this is only talking about for the saints. By these words, the household of faith should know how the plan flows. This is the last of the final trumpets that shall bring about the day of Yahweh. When this last trumpet shall sound, we shall all know that the final Sabbath is about to begin. This 50th year is also metaphoric of the 50th day Feast of Weeks, the harvesting of the first fruits of Yahweh, to do the following. Look at 1 John chapter 3 and verse 1, and we're winding down. 1 Yochanan 3, 1 through 2. 1 Yochanan or 1 John 3, 1, 2. And it says, behold what manner of love the Father bestowed upon us, that we should be called the sons of Elohim. Therefore the world knoweth us not, because it knew him not. Beloved, now are we the sons of Elohim, and it does not yet appear what we shall be. But we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. This shall be the ultimate collection, those who shall be raised and changed to see him as he is, because they will be then like him, existing in their new spiritual tabernacles. Yes, this is and shall be a great mystery. And so is our hope for the 8th day, the final Sabbath of 1,000 years, if we endure. If we treat the Sabbath for 24 hours without our personal words, so on and so forth. However, for the children of Israel and for those of the other nations that shall live when this day comes, there shall be a different form of liberty. Back to Leviticus chapter 25 and verse 10. Leviticus chapter 25 and verse 10. Leviticus chapter 25 and verse 10. And ye shall hallow the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. It shall be a jubilee unto you, and ye shall return every man unto his own possession, and ye shall return every man to his own family. These shall proclaim a different form of liberty in which men shall return unto their own possessions and families. Look at Micah chapter 4. Micah chapter 4. And we're going to read verses 1 through 4. Micah chapter 4, verses 1 through 4. It says, but in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of Yahweh shall be established in the top of the mountains. And we know this is the last of the last days. And it shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it. And many nations shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, and to the house of Elohim of Yaqub. And he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth out of Zion, and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem, and he shall judge amongst many people, and rebuke strong nations afar off, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up a sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore, but they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of Yahweh of hosts has spoken it. We should remember that all flesh and blood shall exist under the covenant of peace that Yahweh promised the children of Israel would occur in that day. These other nations shall return to their own nations and possessions in peace. Many will seek Yahweh. We know by the mouths of the prophets Ezekiel and Zechariah that the weekly Sabbath, the Passover, and the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the Feast of Tabernacles, yet only the first 7 days, shall be observed by these flesh and blood survivors during this final Sabbath. This also strongly suggests that the children of Israel that failed and continue to fail to accept their commissions operate on a separate plan than the household of faith. While my studies continue, it appears that their 7-day plan actually began with their final rejection of Yahweh, which is why they shall continue to dwell in these temporary physical bodies throughout the 8th day Sabbath. Now, we know by the writings of the Apostle Yochanan that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil shall be bound during this Sabbath, and that for a short period it will be released after this Sabbath to once again deceive the nations. Revelations chapter 20 and verse 7. Revelations chapter 20 and verse 7. Revelation chapter 20 and verse 7. And these are our final scriptures for tonight. Revelation chapter 20 and verse 7. When 1,000 years are expired, so they're over, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison. See, he can't be loosed during the 1,000 years because that's the 1,000 years of peace. That is the Sabbath of rest. He cannot be released during that period of time. Verse 12, and I saw the dead, small and great, stand before Elohim, and the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life, and the dead were judged out of the things that were written in the books, which we know to be Elohim's word, known as the Bible, according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them. And they were judged every man according to their works, and death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. I read verse 7 simply to establish the timing. All this occurs after the Sabbath. And this is the final collection of man that shall clearly occur after the final Sabbath of 1,000 years. This shall be what is referred to as the Great White Throne Judgment. The Passover concluded with the end of the final Sabbath. 14 days. 6 days of work during creation week, and then beginning on the Sabbath day, 8 days of Tabernacles. The Noetic line. Most of the European-led groups within the Household of Faith believe that this represents the eighth day, talking about this time period when the great white throne judgment is there. Some among these refer to it as the eternal day. And of course, there is no such phrase in Elohim's word. And to accept this teaching also rejects what has been presented to the Household of Faith as the mindset of Elohim about what they think a day to be. For you and I, we have been given an opportunity above all opportunities during these times. Let us remember that. In fact, we have received an invitation to participate in the final Sabbath as members of the ultimate collection of men and women to reign with Yeshua HaMashiach in that day, the final Sabbath. We are all being influenced by our surroundings, be they physically or spiritually minded. In these days of modernity, the challenge is greater than we perhaps have ever seen in our lives. And yet, in spite of these challenges, where is our faith? Where is our resolve? What trees are we truly feeding ourselves of as we approach the final appointed time during this year of turmoil and forbidden fruit? What are the mindsets of those who believe themselves to be members of the Household of Faith? Which collection are you choosing? Which collection am I choosing? The Sabbath of Yahweh has been given to us for a purpose. It shall provide the privilege of a few, and only Elohim knows what this few shall entail. To be collected from amongst mankind, to enter into Yahshua's rest. From Sabbath to Sabbath, the choice is ours. I pray we all choose to be included in Yahshua's Sabbath ultimate collection. Shalom, everybody. I know this was a long one. I pray that everybody was able to stay with me. And I will be, and I may have gone a little fast. I know last week Marcia mentioned that I went kind of fast with that lesson, and I had more in this lesson. I may have went for a little bit more speed. I don't know. I wanted to get through it. But I'll have the recording up later tonight. That's easy to do for me. And I will have the written version up tomorrow. I don't think I'm going to be making a whole lot of changes. And with that, any comments or any questions? And in particular, is anyone confused, about what I said, particularly when I said you have the first 6 days of creation week, then you have beginning with the Sabbath day of creation week until the final Sabbath, 8 days. Beginning with that Sabbath day, the 7,000 years of dwelling in physical tabernacles begins for the Household of Faith, ending with the eighth day. For the children of Israel, because of their disobedience, their 7,000 years actually begins on the first day after the Sabbath, and it will flow through the eighth day Sabbath. This is why they will dwell still in their physical tabernacles during the eighth day, which is why it is still a part of tabernacles. There will be two types of tabernacles dwelling at that time, the physical tabernacles of the children of Israel as well as the nations, and then the saints in their new, glorious, spiritual tabernacle. So I hope I've mentioned this a few times to you, and it's becoming pretty straightforward that this is the way that it really is delivered to us in Elohim's word. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to ask. And I know you all, if you do, you will ask. But any comments or any questions for tonight's lesson? Any comments or any lesson? Any thoughts whatsoever? Any thoughts whatsoever? Any thoughts? Any questions? Okay. I don't know if that means I confuse you. Does it mean you need to listen to it again? Does it mean that you really got it and no comments or any questions are needed at this time, but I have to accept that? Or does it mean that you all went to sleep on me? I don't know any of the above. I know it was a long one, and my apologies to you, but I felt that I need to include all that I included to try to get the point across of what really is happening from the Sabbath of creation to the last Sabbath of the appointed times of the plan of Elohim. So, is everybody agreeing with what was presented tonight? Maybe I should ask that question.
Agreeing?
I'm sorry?
You said, is anybody agreeing with what you presented?
Yes.
Yeah. It made sense. I like the title, Sabbath to Sabbath. It shows the complete picture, you know, of the plan of salvation. So I thought it was good.
Yeah, that's kind of what, when the title came to me, Marcia, That's where I knew it was going to go, and I thought it would be appropriate because we are headed towards the final three appointed times, you know, coming up, what, in another month or so?
Yeah.
Something like that? So, yeah. So I'm glad that it's not confusing to you. Praise Elohim. Praise Elohim. Believe it or not, though, it is something that a lot of people in the household of faith have yet to be taught. We've learned that a lot of people, well, you guys know that a lot of people in the household of faith never heard of End That Day, which to me is sad that they have not, because if I recall when we did that lesson, 12 different prophets actually speak about End That Day, and I know that Yahshua also speaks about End That Day. You might recall when he said, "In that day, many will come before me saying that I did this in your name or I did that in your name." He said, "Hey, get thee away from me. I never knew you." That's the day as well. So, but yeah, some people have not been taught about End That Day, and so it is not necessarily a concept that is in the word, and I don't know where people just come up with this thing about this eternal day. There is no such thing as an eternal day in the word of God. It just doesn't exist, but that we know a lot of brethren that believe in it. So any other comment tonight by anybody? Okay. I have been asked again to do a lesson with the Zoom group, and I'm very hesitant to do so. I mean, you guys have been with me for a while and kind of know my how I present, and I try to stick to the word and just let the word flow. And if we let it flow for itself, it presents its own picture to us. And based on, you know, my last time speaking with them, there are some concepts that they have not been taught, and it makes it a little bit difficult to teach that particular group. And as I was listening to their Bible study a little bit earlier tonight, a message was sent to me to let them know when I'm ready to teach again, And I find it interesting that they're even asking me, because the leadership had determined that all the lessons must be in accordance with the doctrines of the Church of God International, which they know my lessons are not going to be totally in consideration of the doctrines of the Church of God International. I don't consider that at all. And so I'm kind of surprised that I'm being asked to do it again. And I know that to do it again, I would have to really be careful with what I say, just to make sure that everybody's understanding. I'm not even sure if I want to do that. So I ask for prayer from you all. I love them, brothers. I really do. But I'm not sure if I really want to do that, because I don't want to go back and not knowing what they know and what they don't know. It's kind of a difficult. And also, it's not so much that they don't know. It's the fact that they fight with things about new things. If they don't come from the hierarchy of the Church of God International, or well, their pastor is no longer have a pastor in Jamaica. But they fight against new biblical concepts, and that's the difficult thing for me to sometimes accept. And it's not only them. It's happened with me from the Israel, brothers and sisters from the Israel of God as well. And that's a sad thing for me in this time of modernity. So I ask you for your prayers on it. I am considering it, but I just don't know what I would talk about that is so mild that I can present it to them without there being controversy. So I ask for your prayers in that matter. I'm still hope to, now that I've finished some of the projects I was doing around the house, the basement is finished. It's still my plan to do the Zoom thing. It's just that there's always something, you know. I don't have as many free moments as you might think I do, even though I'm retired. But I do plan on doing it. I want to do it. And I haven't set it up yet. I do plan on setting it up soon. I don't know whether it'll be this week or next week, but I do plan on doing it very, very soon, setting us up on Zoom. And you know, when I do set up on Zoom, I will let the brethren on the other study know about it. They can join in then if they want to. To me, that's no different, but it won't be. But as I've made it plain, it won't be under the umbrella of the Church of God International. So I ask for your prayers in that too. In that endeavor, I would like to get it done by next week, but I just don't know if I will get it done by next week. I don't know what all is involved, number one. I kind of got an idea of the cost, but what all do I have to set up on the computer? Has anybody on the line gone through that process of setting something up on Zoom before? Anybody?
I haven't. I can ask Kawana, because I know she has a Zoom. I think it's through work, though.
Okay.
But I can inquire.
Okay. I appreciate that. Like I said, you know, just as I did when I don't expect Zoom to be as difficult as it was setting up the website. The website was a monster, because I had to develop a lot of stuff that would go. Then I had to, you know, develop a style that the website would look like. That took a lot of time, a lot of space. I had to develop the emblem that you see on the website. That took a lot of work to do that. A lot of searching, really, to find the right site that would help me and present me the option. You know, it's easy to pay for people to develop an emblem for you. I was blessed. Eventually, I got to a free place where I could develop one, and that's how I came up with the one that we have. But just designing the site, it took a long time, and then once I designed it, I was blessed to find someone who would help me to implement what I designed. So, but that took some time. I don't expect Zoom to take anywhere near that type of effort or time. but I just don't know what it entails at this point in time. But I would like to get it up as soon as possible, which could open the door for some others to join in. And if I do the Zoom thing, I will probably still do the conference line concept. Not that you need to call in for the conference line, but I would do it just to keep recording the audio. I don't know if Zoom allows you to record, so I want to keep doing the audios and putting them on the website as I'm doing. So I would still do that as well. So that is my plan. So keep me in your prayers that I can get it done in a timely manner, and hopefully Elohim will bless that effort. So any thoughts? What did you guys think about what the scriptures had to say? Did it make you have any thoughts about the Sabbath day in itself? Anybody, any thoughts about that?
For me, I think it just reinforced that, you know, what we're doing is not in vain, and there's an expectation based on the promises that were made. So it's just for us to be long-suffering and just finish the race.
Had you really thought about, Brother Chris, what the scripture says? I know we read it. I know you read it several times. But the fact that it's an if and. So if you turn away your feet from doing your own stuff, speaking your own words, whatever, then will you ride the high places? You ever thought about it like that? Because that's really basically what it says. It's an if and.
I'm sure I have, but I think about it kind of on a consistent basis, especially, you know, with those around me who are close to me, just doing all the worldly stuff, and I continue to do what I'm supposed to do. And then as you were reading the scriptures, it's like most people don't understand that, you know, when it talks about the books were open and we were judged out of the books, and it's like for all that people do, engage themselves in, partake of, they do very little as it pertains to the Word of God, if anything. And then just to see, you know, us on the call, let's go through as many scriptures as we go through. And then, you know, the fact that, you know, part of the day, part of the Sabbath, tomorrow, we'll all be, you know, doing additional studying or, you know, partaking in additional, you know, lessons or what have you. And while the rest of the world just kind of, you know, goes about the business of the worldly stuff. And it's just, sometimes it's just kind of disappointing, but I think the continuing to study and read the word is reassuring that we're doing the right thing, and you just hope that others are, you know, led into the word, so they don't have to, one, stand in judgment, but also, two, they can understand and reap the benefits of obeying God.
And how difficult is it? Who was it that was at the funeral with me? Was it you, Chris, or you, Marcia, when the pastor told people you can't believe in everything you read in the Bible?
It was Marcia.
Okay. That just, you know, to have heard him say that, it's almost like if you're not there, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
Well, it is, but like I think I mentioned to you guys that I was going to a barbershop where come to find out it's a lot of preachers that actually come to the barbershop and get their hair cut by the owner of the barbershop, who calls himself a preacher. And my barber actually decided to leave the shop, and now he's at another location. But he and I were talking on Thursday when he cut my hair yesterday, and you know, he got to talking about the guy, the owner, and he said it had got to a point where the guy would try to avoid me because I would be hitting him with so much book, and he really didn't have a response. But all other times when I'm not around, he's constantly, you know, preaching to folks and trying to get them to trying to engage them. But when somebody has a certain level of knowledge and he can't really, you know, he has no response or, you know, appropriate response, then he shies away. Mm-hmm. And so, and, you know, I kind of noticed that a little bit, but he'll put up a good front sometimes. And then just talking to my barber said he doesn't go to church because, you know, and he started naming different preachers, including the guy over here at, I think it was Fellowship, who got caught up sleeping with one of the parishioners. And I didn't know that he was having an affair with the lady for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And when they told him he needed to step down, he said, no, I'm not doing it. I'm going to do it on my own terms. And so this is what's going on in the world and why everything is so upside down in the black community. And, mm-hmm. you know, I don't keep up with that kind of stuff like that. So
right.
unless somebody tells me, yeah. you know, but just the fact that, you know, that's happening. And then I've heard a couple people on the radio say that this is the Joshua generation. And I'm like, oh, love. Like, Joshua was following the word of God. And ain't none of y'all following the word of God.
Mm.
Talking about the young people, you know, with the uprisings and this, that, and the other. Right. And it's like, ooh, nah. We're not going there.
I'll mention something about that just briefly after I shut down the recording. I don't want to say it on the recording, but our young people are really being led by the forbidden trees. And there's no leadership amongst them right now. And it's one of the saddest things. I was downtown actually yesterday on Michigan to pick up some glasses at right at Van Buren in Michigan, between Van Buren and whatever the next street over is coming north. And it's an interesting sight down there right now. But the my doctor's office, she has boarded up her office once again. She said she's just going to leave it like that for a while. But she refuses to allow them to tear down her glass again. And I was talking to the sister that works in there, and she was saying how lost they are. And, you know, she's down there every day. And she walked me out, actually, and she walked out. There was a bunch of them walking down the street. Of course, the guys had the pants down and stuff, and she was just saying they're just lost. And you know, I've heard something on my own about it, and it's an interesting phenomena that's happening right now, because now I live out in the burbs and I don't watch the local news too often. And so sometimes I'm late hearing about things. My wife was actually going to work on Monday on Metra, and she had to jump off and come back home because she didn't know about the riots that had taken place downtown on Sunday. And so they shut downtown. So when I think about the pastor that told the congregation, and remember that congregation is in the middle of the hood, and he tells them, well, I don't agree with this scripture, and you can't believe in everything you read in the Bible. Well, that tells you right there that he really hasn't read. It also tells us big time, right, that he is eating from a different tree. He's eating not from the trees in the garden, but from them other trees, you know. And so, and it boils down to the fact that he's eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And he's only eating, really eating the evil side, to make that kind of a statement to your congregation. And, you know, I know a couple of people in that congregation. I'm on Facebook with a couple of them. And, you know, they think that they're actually doing the right thing before Elohim. And so, and they're led by that type of a spirit. And so it is a sad thing what we see physical Israel going through in this day. And to be very honest with you, regardless who wins this presidential election, I don't see that really improving, because there's no leadership amongst Israel right now, none whatsoever. So, and that's sad to say. But for us, and this is why I'm thankful that I'm being led with the lessons that I'm being led to, because it's a challenge to me to try to keep my head above water, to learn how to walk with a gentle spirit, to walk in humility, but yet to walk. Because nobody on this lesson is immune to other voices in our lives, that whether they're doing it on purpose or just through ignorance, can cause us to what? To do our own pleasure or their pleasure on the Sabbath day, or some other thing. So it is not a easy time. And Chris, I hear what you're saying. I know the circumstances when, from a spiritual perspective, you're unequally yoked with your spouse. It can be a little difficult. But that's why I say, hey, we all need to look at this time with this virus as an opportunity. An opportunity to grow even a little bit stronger in how to allow our light shine. But that's what we're supposed to be doing, right? Our light is supposed to be shining right now. So how do we do it? And how do we stand strong in the midst of what is all about us? While it might be difficult, remember the word told us, ain't nothing happening to us that is not coming unto man. So others got it worse than us, so we can do it. So I'm thankful that this lesson was put into my mind. It's a challenge to me. And if you think about it, during this time with the virus, all these Zoom things coming up. I mentioned to you guys, I don't know if any of you all have checked on it or not, that IOG and others have a study that they do on the Sabbath somewhere around 5 o'clock, maybe 4 o'clock our time. Tara said 5, so it might be 5 o'clock her time, which would be, what, 4 o'clock our time on the Sabbath. So did anybody look into that at all? Anybody?
I didn't. I may reach out to Tyra and have her send me the info.
Yeah, I asked her for it, but I know Tyra is on the move these days, and right now with her husband actually doing more work out of town, so she's having to deal with the kids, and she's still working too. So I know her time is limited, but so yeah, reach out to her and see if you can get it, because it sounds like if I didn't say it last week, I tell you, that sister's on fire for the word. She's on fire. And she was going to attend Tabernacles this year. The virus may have knocked it out, but I think I mentioned to you guys, she told me that a group of them get together every day doing Tabernacles. So, and they are doing something to be obedient to what the word says, to do something for all 8 days. But yeah, look out, reach out to her, Chris. And I think you probably should do it anyway, because she seems to be someone that both you and Marcia, I would suggest that you try to stay in closer contact with her. I think you all could be beneficial for one another, particularly during this time there, this particular time. You both, all of you have children, and I can tell you she's been doing a lot of studying, and she's stepping out. And we talked a little bit about what it was like for her being here during the summer, and you all know who her dad is in terms of religious statue. So that had to be cut. So at any rate, yeah, reach out to her, man, because that sounds like it could be interesting. Tyra, and sound like there are some on there that are stepping up to the plate, trying to get others to see. Our friend Bunciel, she is still going to Jamaica for the feast, and she called me yesterday, and she is on fire right now about Israel and trying to get some of the brothers and sisters who have been taught by the Europeans what we know to be untruths about Israel's identity, and she's on fire about that, and is her goal during this Tabernacles in Jamaica to get them to get it right. And she's talking to the leadership down there. So let's be in prayer for her that she can accomplish it. There really is no reason for anybody's household of faith not to know about Israel. It really isn't. All you got to do is, you don't have to read outside sources. She was talking about these other books. I mean, I just didn't say anything. But we don't need to read outside sources. Just read the book. And the one European group I mentioned to you guys, what is it, TOTW.org, they have started reading the book, and they concluded that it's totally impossible for Israel to be the United States and Great Britain. And this is a pretty much all European group that came out of worldwide knowledge of the groups. So if you open your mind up and go and read the word of Elohim, it will bring you out of that teaching. So praise Elohim that this group is doing so. It ain't no, you know, it ain't no hierarchy thing for us. It's just the truth. And so, and really, it don't bring us no great pleasure because we know Israel is suffering. Israel is not walking in the way of Elohim right now. So ain't no great pleasure to have that knowledge, but it's just simply the truth. That's all. And so keep Vanciel in prayer. Keep her and Brother Gary. Gary's on right now. He might be tired. He had a rough night. But Gary will be going to Jamaica as well. So keep both of them in prayer about this as they go down to Jamaica. Both of them, Vanciel is actually leaving next Thursday. So she's going to be down there for almost a month before the Feast of Tabernacles. She's going to attend Trumpets and Atonement there in Jamaica. But she used to live in Jamaica, folks, so she knows her way around. She was married to a Jamaican people. But keep her in prayer regardless, her and Gary, and as well as everybody who's still traveling to Tabernacles. Our travel will be short. It's only, about an hour and a half away where we'll be attending, looks like, this year. And so be a different experience for us, but it'll be something different to look forward to. We're so used to Jamaica and what happens at that site. And we love what happens at that site. Look forward to going back there again in the future once this thing kind of clears up. But I did do my own research in terms of flying, and I concurred with my wife. This is a good time for us to spread our wings elsewhere. So, but keep those in prayer that we'll be traveling this year to the feast at some of the other sites. And that's pretty much it for me. I will mention something very briefly once we close out. Very briefly, though. I'm not going to hold you guys. But anybody else got any comment they want to make this evening? Any comment? Thank you for being on, number one. Thank you for grasping. Thank you for Elohim opening up your eyes. I can't open your eyes up to this stuff. It has to come from above, so I'm thankful for that. Any other comment by anyone before we close out? Okay, so let us bow our heads and once again close out with the Lord's Prayer. Let us pray. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. In Yahshua's name we pray. So be it. Praise the Almighty for his word. Once again, thankful to all of you all now, so you have a wonderful Sabbath. And hang on for just a second as I close out the recording. I just wanted to mention one quick thing to you. So good night, everybody.